Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to refuah shlema, complete recovery for Sharon Katz, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Rachel, Pesach Zev Ben Chava, Harab Mir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. We have three subjects we want to cover on this week's program. The first is Donald Trump says that he's a genius. That's a quote. He now is calling himself a genius. And the second subject is Steve Bannon, who was the chief White House strategist, who was Donald Trump's ultimate confidant, and who played a big role in helping Donald Trump get elected president. Steve Bannon now says that the Russia meeting, where Donald Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner and other members of the Trump family met with representatives of Vladimir Putin, that meeting was treasonous and unpatriotic. And the third subject we want to discuss is this week's parasha, Parashat Va'era, where the seven plagues now, the first seven out of the 10 plagues, strike Egypt. First, let's start off with Donald Trump saying he's a genius. I don't know what it would take to embarrass the Trumpsters. Having the leader who is so unbelievably dumb and so unbelievably ignorant and such a clown and such a buffoon, and yet he thinks he's the most brilliant person ever. I mean, the ego of this individual, the megalomaniac view of himself. In the book that just came out about Donald Trump's presidency, where you have the author who interviewed almost everyone who was around Trump, interviewed his family, spent 3 hours with Trump himself, interviewed his cabinet secretaries, everybody that was close to Trump. In this book, which really is a thorough expose, the conclusions of everybody in the book, all the people around Trump, consider him to be like a child. They think he's mentally unstable. They think he's dangerous. They think he's like a child. They think he's impetuous. They're afraid to leave him with the nuclear buttons, with the nuclear codes, where he can launch a nuclear war and blow up the world because he gets mad at somebody because of some ego problem that he has. They're afraid. They're really worried. His cabinet secretaries even spoke about the 25th Amendment and the 25th Amendment of the Constitution. The cabinet secretaries can remove Donald Trump from office if he's unfit. And the book shows that a lot of them seriously speak about the fact that there may come a time when they feel they may have to do that because of some of the crazy things that he proposes and some of the crazy ideas and some of the crazy things he's capable of doing. But Donald Trump responds to all of this by saying that he's a genius. He says he's really, really smart, and he's a genius. And then he says he's not just a genius, but he's also a very stable genius. The truth is, Donald Trump is not stable, certainly not a genius. He's the most ignorant president in modern history. And we've had quite a few ignorant presidents. I mean, we had George W. Bush and Gerald Ford, who both were very, very dumb presidents. I mean, to have a president like Bush Jr., or a president like Ford is an embarrassment to the country. But Donald Trump makes them look like geniuses. They look like geniuses. Every president looks like Professor Albert Einstein compared to Donald Trump. Secretary of State Tillerson called him a moron and an idiot. Steve Bannon has said in the book that his ignorance was so appalling that people had to explain the Constitution and the most basic things to him, that he has no understanding of things which even the average educated American would know about. It's just people who work with him are alarmed at his ignorance, at his refusal to learn, at his inability to learn, and very concerned about his mental stability. But anyway, he responds to all of this by saying, "I'm a genius." Now, let me tell you something. We've never had a president before who runs around saying, "I'm a genius." And there's a reason for that. Usually leaders in democratic countries and democratic societies don't go around saying, I'm a genius. It doesn't look good. It doesn't smell good. It doesn't look good. You don't do that. And that's something Donald Trump doesn't understand because he has a dictatorial mindset and a dictatorial mentality. The only leaders that praise themselves and worship themselves and say, I'm a genius, the only leaders who do that are dictators. Hitler, yimach shmo, said that he was a genius. Mussolini, yimach shmo, would refer to himself as a genius. Stalin, yimach shmo, all of these monstrous murderers and dictators who slaughtered many tens of millions of people, they call themselves geniuses. They praise themselves all the time. Kim Jong-un, that lunatic in North Korea, who has murdered maybe 3 million of his own people already, most of them he starved to death. Kim Jong-un calls himself a genius, and his father called himself the dear leader, and Kim Jong-un has compared himself to God and has said that he's a god. So the only people that speak like that are dictators. And you see Trump often expressing regret that he doesn't have the same power that dictators like Vladimir Putin, like his boss Vladimir Putin has in Russia. And so he's using the language that only dictators use. Isn't this embarrassing to you that you have a president who's so egotistical and so ignorant and such a damn fool? I mean, when will there ever be any shame or embarrassment over all of his tweeting and all the nonsense that he says and all the crazy things that he does which undermine his own administration and his own program? Anyway, Steve Bannon was the chief White House strategist. And Steve Bannon, unlike Donald Trump, I don't like Steve Bannon for other reasons, because he supported Trump and stabbed Ted Cruz in the back. Originally, he was supporting Ted Cruz, and then he stabbed Ted Cruz in the back and jumped on the Trump bandwagon. And he got Breitbart, the Breitbart news site was originally supporting Ted Cruz. And he got them to change and support Trump. So I don't like Steve Bannon. He did a lot of damage to the country, and I don't think he's a good person. But he's not stupid. Steve Bannon is a very, very intelligent, educated, even brilliant strategist. And he said, and he and others in the book have said, that Donald Trump is like a little child. He's impetuous. He's like a little child. He wants instant gratification. People are frightened by what he's capable of doing. Anyway, now Steve Bannon said something else, which is very true. Very, very true. And I was wondering when someone who supported Trump would finally get up and say this, what we've been saying all along, that it is treason. It is treason to meet with representatives of an enemy government and help an enemy government and be agents of act like agents of an enemy government. That's what Trump and his family have been doing. They have been defenders of Russia, have been working on behalf of Russia, have been apologists for all of Russia's hostile activity, and Russia's main enemy is the United States. Because Vladimir Putin dreams of recreating the Soviet Empire. He's the old KGB, and don't forget, for many years he was a KGB agent. And he dreams of recreating the old Soviet Empire. He doesn't hide it. The Russian media doesn't hide that dream. And his barbarous behavior in the world, helping the Syrians murder 1 million of their own people, in the Iran-Iraq war, helping them, 2 million Muslims murdered their fellow Muslims with assistance, both getting assistance from Russia. The Russians have the most barbarous policies. They support the cruelest, most ruthless Hitlers in the world, the most ruthless tyrants and beasts that slaughter millions of their own people. And there's no question that their target is the United States. And Donald Trump will not criticize, will not condemn them, makes excuses for them, and keeps pushing policies that benefit Russia and benefit Putin as much as he can get away with. Congress doesn't like the pro-Russia policies of the Trump administration, so Congress pushes back and the media pushes back and other people push back. But he does as much as he can get away with, as much as he can promote Putin's policies and promote what Putin wants, for instance, like giving Putin complete control over Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon, something which no prior administration ever would have accepted. Trump fully accepts it and helped the Russians by helping clean out ISIS. Destroying ISIS in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon was terrible. Terrible. Because ISIS was killing Iranian terrorists. When ISIS terrorists kill Iranian terrorists and the terrorists are killing each other, that's good. When the terrorists are slaughtering each other, that is good. It is good when terrorists kill each other. Now, what Trump has done, he's created a situation where one side, the Iranians and the Russians, have taken over, have won, have completely conquered those three countries and are controlling most of those three countries now. That's the situation Trump created, which is disastrous, which is one of the reasons why Putin and the Russian media defend him so zealously, because he's doing exactly what Russia wants the United States to do. He's acting like an enemy agent of the United States when he does those things. Because those things are terrible for America. They're good for Russia. They're good for Iran. But they're terrible for America. And they're terrible for Israel. And so Steve Bannon said that this meeting with a Russian representative of Vladimir Putin, working with a foreign hostile government to intervene in an American presidential election, Donald Trump Jr. participated in the meeting. Jared Kushner, the son-in-law, the self-hating Jewish son-in-law of Trump, participated in the meeting. And Bannon said that this was treasonous, that this was unpatriotic and treasonous. Of course it was. Of course it was. If this had been done by Democrats or by liberals, what would all of you Trumpsters be saying? What would everybody be saying? Because the Trump family did something treasonous for their own selfish economic reasons and political reasons? Because they were willing to collaborate and cooperate with an enemy power, a hostile enemy power that was intervening in the American electoral process? Because Trump family people did it? You make excuses for it? You say, oh, that's ridiculous. It wasn't treasonous. I guarantee you, if Democrats had done it, you would be saying it's treasonous. And it would be. And by the way, what Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton did with their dealings with Russia they were also treasonous. They also have treasonous dealings with Russia. They're also traitors. There's treason on both sides, because the establishment in this country, the political establishment, Democrat, Republican, liberal, and so-called conservative, are rotten to the core. And they are traitors. And they betrayed the American people. And they betrayed the United States over and over again. They are rotten to the core. There are only two parties in America. The establishment and those that are against the establishment. And Donald Trump is the establishment. He is the ultimate swamp. Him and his administration are the swamp. They are the establishment. And so Steve Bannon finally got caught telling the truth. And now he's trying to backpedal it because the Trump people who drink the Kool-Aid on Fox News every night, they will not accept anything that's critical of Donald Trump. Look at the harm that Trump has done already. You know, it used to be you were conservative if you were pro-life, if you favored reducing the tax burden, if you favored cutting government spending, if you favored securing the border, if you favored policies that are good for the United States and for the free world and for freedom and justice and that was conservative. And if you were pro-Israel, that was conservative once upon a time. That has gone. Now you're judged if you're conservative or liberal by, do you support Trump? You support Trump, you're conservative, even if you're pro-abortion, even if you're pro-open borders. Chris Collins, the congressman from upstate New York, Republican congressman from upstate New York, supports open borders. Supports amnesty for all the illegal aliens. Takes left-wing positions on every issue, but he supports Trump, so he's considered to be a conservative. In other words, there's no philosophy left because Trump has no philosophy. Trump eliminated ideology and idealism and principles. He's eliminated that. It's been completely eliminated. We're now like Europe, where there are no true conservatives anymore, where it's been where the right has been obliterated now, just like in Europe. That's the beginning of the end of the United States. That's it. That's it. This could be the final nail in the coffin of the United States. Because I don't know how we come back from this. How do you come back from this? conservatism and republicanism will be completely discredited, and it's going to be it's not going to have any value anyway. In the first year of Trump's presidency, he's outspending Obama. He has increased the rate of spending in the budget in his first year of office. He's increased the rate of spending at a faster rate than Obama did. And the number of illegals coming through on the border, that's higher than it was when Obama was president now. The first couple of months, it was lower. But now that they see that Trump is a bluff, they're coming through in big numbers, it's now higher. Illegal immigration into the United States is higher than it was under Obama now. And if you tell me about the wonderful economy, how wonderful, because the stock market is going up. You know, that boom in that stock market, the so-called boom in the stock market, that started under Obama. That Obama, you've had 87 straight months of job growth and of unemployment going down. That's been going on for 87 straight months. That does not mean the economy is booming. That means that low-paying service jobs are now what the American people are settling for. And America is becoming a nation of service jobs with no real manufacturing base. And that's not going to be rebuilt by what Trump is doing. Not at all. Anyway, you know, we could go on and on about this. You know, the Trumpsters, it's hopeless. He says he's a genius. You obviously think he's a genius. So, you know, you'll continue supporting him and you'll walk right off the cliff with him. Keep drinking the Kool-Aid. Just keep it up and keep saying that meeting with enemies, with KGB agents from Russia is not treasonous. No, that's not treasonous. Meeting with Putin's agents, with agents of Vladimir Putin, an attorney who works for Vladimir Putin, a Russian attorney who works for Putin, in the middle of a presidential campaign, and promising policy changes and trying to make changes in the Republican Party platform to favor Russia and all the other things they've done, and trying to limit the sanctions on Russia and trying to limit any actions against Russia and refusing to criticize Russia and praising Russia. That's not treasonous. That's not treasonous. Can you imagine if Obama's people were doing these things? And Obama was a traitor. But so is Trump. Let's speak in the time we have left. Let's see what we got here. Okay. About this week's Parashat Va'era, which is the Torah portion where the first seven plagues that strike Egypt, are now something that are detailed in this parasha. We have to remember, what was the conflict in Egypt about? Well, first of all, the Jews are made slaves. The Hebrews were made slaves by Pharaoh and by the Egyptian regime, which was the world's ultimate superpower at that time. And Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, and Aaron, go to Paro, go to Pharaoh, and they say to him, "Let my people go. Israel is my son, even my firstborn." Interesting, by the way. Think about that. It says, "Israel is my son, even my firstborn." And that's what Moses tells Pharaoh. And he said demands that he free the slaves. Well, Pharaoh refuses, and Pharaoh says, "I don't know Hashem, I don't know God, I don't know the Lord, and nor will I let them go." Now, it's a shame that you don't speak Hebrew, and you don't, so if I go through the names, there are different names for God. Why are there different names for God in the Bible? Because of the different functions that God plays. Elohim, for instance, is the God of nature and the God that works in this world, and also a God of judgment, Deen, judgment. And Yud-Kei Vav-Kei is the name that we're not allowed to say. That's the God of compassion and the God that fulfills his promises. El Shaddai is a third name. That's the God that makes promises. Doesn't fill promises, but makes promises. In other words, God has different names in accordance with his different manifestations, the different way that he manifests himself before humanity. There's only one God. But that one God is called different things. It would be like if a person was, let's say you have a man who is a teacher, a rabbi, a businessman, and an attorney. He's all four things. And he's also a father and a grandfather. When he's with his grandchildren, he's a grandfather. When he's with his children, he's a father. When he's with his congregants in shul, he's a rabbi. When he's in court, if he's a lawyer, then he's a lawyer. When he's teaching in the university, he's a professor. Whatever his task is, we all have many titles in life. And so God is referred to by how he's presenting himself to humanity, to people. That's how he is referred to in the Torah and in the Tanakh in general. The Tanakh is the Bible in general. The Torah is the first five books of the Bible. And so Paro said, I don't know this God, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, that's the ultimate name of God, the God of compassion. I don't know this God, nor will I let Israel go. And in fact, he had a giant book, a huge encyclopedia, this giant encyclopedia with the names of all the gods. And they looked up the God. They looked him up to see, is there a God like this? And the Talmud teaches us that, in fact, they found the name of this God. And they said, well, this was one of the minor gods in the land of the Canaan, in the land of Canaan, in the land of the Canaanites. It was a god, and he was a god with certain attributes, but not a major god. In other words, they looked it up based on the name in their book, as if that was really what God was all about. And so Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, sets out to show Paro, to show Pharaoh, and to show Egypt through Paro and through Egypt the whole world, because Egypt was the world. Egypt represented the world. Egypt was the ultimate superpower in the world. It was like the United States. It's like if you change the United States and change what the U.S. does, it has an impact on the whole world today. The same thing for Egypt at that time. Egypt was an enormous, powerful empire with tremendous cultural influence on the whole world, massive cultural influence on the world. And so the purpose was to show Egypt and to show the nations of the world who is God, because they didn't know God. There was only Avodah Zarah, idolatry at that time. And they wanted to show the world who is God, and also, more importantly, show God's own people, the Jews, the Hebrews, who is God, through the plagues, through Eser Makot Mitzrayim, the 10 plagues of Egypt. And so we see the first 7 plagues. Unfortunately, because of time limitations, I can't go into each plague and explain each plague, because each plague has its own specific reason. It proves a specific example of God's tremendous power, because the Egyptians believed there's a God, the sun is a God, and the moon is a God, and the stars are gods, and, you know, that they're gods all over the place. And so the 10 plagues were intended to show, level by level, step by step, how God controls everything on earth, God controls everything in the air, God controls everything in the heavens, God controls everything. And so each of the plagues has a specific significance. It's a specific lesson for both the Hebrews and for the Egyptians and for the world. There's a specific lesson there for everyone. But the main purpose was to show Paro, to show Pharaoh, that there's only one God, that the gods of Egypt have no power. It's not that the sun, I mean, you worship the sun does have power. But the sun only has power. The sun, first of all, has no intelligent, independent intelligence. It's an object, a very powerful object, but it's an object that's controlled by God. And nature is something that God created. The rules of nature were created by God. And when God wants to change the rules of nature, as he did with the Nisim, as he did with the miracles of Egypt, he can do that as well. All of that was being proven in the first 7 miracle, in the first 7 makot, in the first 7 plagues of Egypt to Pharaoh. And it hasn't changed to this day. Because we're taught that if you want to learn about the final Geulah, the final redemption, look at the original Geulah from Egypt. The original redemption from Egypt. It's going to be the same, except it's going to be on a much grander scale. The final redemption of the world. When the Jews are finally redeemed in after the war of Gog and Magog and all the other things that are going to happen in the end of days, it's going to be far greater than the liberation from Egypt and than the miracles of Egypt on a far greater scale. And so once again, we're showing the world, the Jewish people are showing the world that there is a God and that He controls everything. And the purpose of the Jews is to show the world what its true destiny is all about. You know, the chancellor, one of the original chancellors of Germany, of the old Germany, before the Nazis and before one of the original chancellors, once asked his doctor, he said, "Do you have any proof that there's really a God? Any proof?" And his doctor, not Jewish, his doctor said, "Of course, the Jews are the proof that there is a God. Just look at the Jews. Look at the Jews survive and look at them. What an amazing people. And throughout so many generations, they're the proof that there is a God." The Jews were always the proof that there is a God. They are a light unto the nations and a holy nation, a nation of priests. At least that's what they're supposed to be. And God, against their own will, is forcing them to be that. That's why they win wars in 6 days. That's why they defeat enemies that are 100 times their size. That's why they survive against all odds when their own leaders are traitors and when their own people are nuts. Still they survive. They're nuts, the Jews. They're suicidal, they're nuts, they're crazy. And God protects them and enables them to survive. The greatest miracle in history is the fact that the Jewish people have survived for 4,000 years. That's the greatest miracle in history. Against all odds. The whole world was against them. They were against themselves. They don't even want to be Jewish. They don't want even the great destiny that God has given to them because they have no understanding of what it means. And they don't want to understand it. And still they survive and go on and look at the incredible thing. And they return to their land after 2,000 years and win victories against all odds in six-day wars, outnumbered 100-1. And Israel quadruples in size in just six-day wars. I mean, as our great leader, our beloved Rabbi, Harav Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha, Hashem Yekom Damo, always used to say, if you don't believe, when you see what's going on with Israel and the world today, if you don't believe, you're not an atheist, you're blind. But unfortunately, there are a lot of blind people in the world today. And so we have to open people's eyes. Our Hebrew movement is, this week especially, was a good week for our Hebrew movement. Thousands of people are coming to our videos. Thousands of people, the Likud supporters of Netanyahu, are complaining about our videos because they know it's starting to bite. Thousands of people are coming to our videos. I don't know in the end how much of an effect it will have. I really don't know. But I know that our message is reaching more and more Israeli Jews. Thousands every week are hearing our message. Our Hebrew movement is 50 times as active. And by the way, that's not just a number I'm pulling out of a hat. It is literally 50 times as active. If you look at the number of people speaking about our English Facebook page versus the Hebrew Facebook page, the Hebrew Facebook page has 50 times as many people speaking about the page. In other words, active, as the English Facebook page. And as far as the Hebrew videos, the same story. I mean, just no comparison. The Hebrew movement is reaching people. It's reaching more and more people. Thousands of people every week. That adds up. That adds up. That's hundreds of thousands every year. It adds up. And it's only a country of 6 million Jews. The English movement, on the other hand, is not doing well. So the good news is the Hebrew movement is growing and we're reaching more and more people. The English movement is not, because we've taken an unpopular stand on Donald Trump. In Israel, they don't care about what we say about Donald Trump. That's a minor issue to them compared to the other issues that we're raising. But anyway, we're reaching people, and we can reach more people. We can reach so many more people with your help. Don't you want us to reach people with the truth? Don't you want us to wake people up in Israel about the destructive policies of the Netanyahu regime and about how Israel has to become independent and how Israel has to do what must be done to survive? We're also, of course, promoting Moshe Feiglin and the Zehut Party in Israel, and they're going to be running in the elections. I don't know if Feiglin's going to win. I don't know if he's going to get seats. But I do know that we're promoting him. We're doing what we can to promote him as best we can. And we're trying to wake people up in general. If you want this message to reach the people of Israel, if you want the truth to reach the people of Israel, if you don't want Jews to surrender their land, and if you want Jews to know that there's no Palestine and there are no Palestinians, you want Jews to understand the entire land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people, and you want them to understand what their destiny is as a people, what we can do and what we can be if we only believe and believe in the truth. If you want them to hear that message, then help us. Help us financially. The more support we get financially, the more we can advertise and the more people will see our message. The more people will see our videos, the more people will see our message. And help us by spreading the word about our movement, about our sites, the Hebrew site, the English site, and everything that we're doing in our movement. The more you spread the word, the more people you bring to us, the better. If we work together, we can still make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.